Good morning, and thank you all for being here today to share the Dharma. Great is the matter of birth and death. Life slips quickly by. Time waits for no one. Wake up, wake up. Don't waste a moment. Some of you may have noticed that these words are written on a pillar opposite the old basement zendo. Traditionally, they're written at the entrance to the zendo where you can't help but see them as you enter. We haven't gotten around to doing that for the main zendo yet. They're also written in Chinese on the densho, the big temple bell. During sesshin, the 7-day retreats that we hold here, as part of the evening ritual, the tanto intones, "I beg to urge you, everyone, life and death are a grave matter. All things pass quickly away. Each of you must be completely alert, never neglectful, never indulgent." Gee, do we really believe all that? Do we live our lives as if we really believe that all things pass quickly away? Or do we harbor a tacit assumption of immortality? Today we'll take up case number 47 in the Wu Men Quan, Do Shuai's Three Barriers. The case reads, Do Shuai set up three barriers to examine his students. You make your way through the darkness of abandoned grasses in a single-minded search for your self-nature. Now, honored one, where is your nature? When you have realized your self-nature, you are free of birth and death. When the light of your eyes falls, how are you free? When you are free of birth and death, you know where to go. When your four elements scatter, where do you go? Wu Men's commentary. If you can rightly give the three turning words here, you will be master in all the varied circumstances and will deal with your affinities in accord with the Buddha Dharma. If you have not resolved the matter yet, the food you bolt down won't sustain you. Chew it well, and you won't be hungry. Wu Men's verse. This one instant as it is an infinite number of kalpas. An infinite number of kalpas are at the same time this one instant. If you see into this fact, the true self which is seeing has been seen into. Do Shuai, his Japanese name is Tototsu or Tosotsu, lived from 1044 to 1091 of the Common Era. This puts him in the Song Dynasty, and he was a master in the lineage of Lin Ji, a Rinzai. Here's what Shibayama has to say about Do Shuai. He was ordained while he was still a young boy. First, he studied the sutras of Mahayana and Theravada Buddhism, but later he decided to study Zen. He visited masters at various places and finally became Master Bao Feng's Dharma successor. Later, he moved to Do Shuai Monastery in northern Koseishou, where he began his teaching activities. In order to test visitors and newcomers, he used these three barriers, but there was hardly anyone who could rightly pass through them. Doshuai's life was relatively short. He died at the age of 48. One wonders if he had some premonition of the transience of this life and the importance of facing the issue squarely. This case is one of only three or four koans that addresses directly the issues of death and dying. I always wonder why so few. After all, the whole thrust of Buddhism is the great matter of birth and death. Maybe it wasn't so necessary for the monks in Great Song China to dwell on it because of the example set by their teachers and colleagues. Also, in agrarian societies, birth and death are a much more obvious part of life than in our postmodern world. When it comes to death and dying, there is a lot of ambivalence in this culture. Death is either hidden away in nursing homes and hospices where nobody has to pay too much attention, or if it is a particularly gruesome death or a spectacularly fiery plane crash or a 22-car pileup on I-25, it is blasted at us from every newspaper, radio, and television screen. And this doesn't even begin to consider the obsession with death and dying that infuses so much literature and drama. Death is either a dark, terrifying mystery, or it's a horror show. No wonder we don't always relate well to death and dying. But we're all going to die, sooner or later. When one regularly visits a nursing home or hospice, the sight of the dead isn't all that unusual. There is something about the dead, at least in that situation, that is immediately obvious. You pass by a room. You see someone lying curled on the side in a semi-fetal position, mouth hanging open, eyes not quite completely shut, and a total silence descended. There's no question. In other circumstances, it might be different. In the desperate attempts to rescue victims of a wreck or a landslide or some other disaster, there is no chance to observe dispassionately or quietly. And it's far better to make every effort to resuscitate, even if there doesn't seem to be much of a chance. You don't know for sure. In a talk like this, I suppose it is customary to read some quotes from philosophers and masters about death and dying, and maybe throw in a few death poems. But there's a danger here. That can raise all sorts of expectations about how death is supposed to be, or how we are supposed to think about it. I'll read one quote. It's the best one I've seen on the subject. It's from the English author W. Somerset Maugham, who wrote, "Death is a very dull, dreary affair, and my advice to you is to have nothing whatsoever to do with it." Nevertheless, we do think about it, speculate. Maybe we hope for something peaceful, serene, and not too painful. To know it's coming 7 days ahead, so that we may quiet the mind to abandon the body and be unattached to all things at the last moment, wherein we return to the original mind of no birth and no death, and merge infinitely into the whole universe to manifest as all things in their true nature. With all due respect, every time we recite Da Wei's vow, this passage makes me uncomfortable. Quiet the mind to abandon the body. Body and mind dropped away. What is there to abandon? Unattached to all things? From the very beginning, there has never been a single thing. What is there to attach to or unattach to? The last moment? All moments are this moment. What moment are we waiting for? Return to the original mind. We are right now that original mind. What is there to return to? Merge into the whole universe. Each one of us is the whole universe. What is there to merge with? Manifest with all things. Who is there to manifest anything, and what is there to manifest? Now, I suspect that Da Wei was using expedient means to encourage his students. But to use such a verse as a guide is dangerous. We can get caught up in notions of future, of separation from here and now reality. To attach the thoughts about how or when is a good way or time to die is not practice. None of us has a clue of how we're going to die or when. Death can be peaceful and serene, or it can be painful, frightening, messy, humiliating. It can be the anticipated end of a long and painful illness, or as sudden as a lightning bolt. Don't count on 7 days. Don't count on 7 minutes. Don't count on 7 seconds. There are no guarantees. There is no good death. There is no bad death. However we die, it's not any sign of some kind of failure. It's a sign of our humanity. Given the increasing lifespan in the more wealthy countries, it's considered cool these days to say something like 50 is the new 30. In one of my favorite comic strips, Zippy asks, "Then is death the new 70? However long we may live, the death rate remains, one per person. There were a few times that I tried to bring up the matter with my wife, Candy, while she was in the nursing home, but she really didn't want to talk about it. She much preferred that I read to her or play guitar or just schmooze. Life in the moment. For a long time, I feared that she was in denial. But I came to realize that, in fact, she understood the matter very well. She just wasn't all that worried. As far as dying was concerned, she was quite fearless. I was the one who was fearful and obsessed with dying. I think that Candy saw death as just a matter of getting onto the bus. In an odd sort of way, Candy had an advantage. She had multiple sclerosis. She spent almost half her life seeing her body die, bit by bit by bit. It was painfully, horribly obvious. There was not the slightest possibility of denial or distraction. Most of us are not directly or experientially aware that we are suffering a chronic, incurable, and inevitably fatal condition. We are aware in a theoretical, intellectual sense. It's very easy, especially if one has had a small degree of insight, to fool oneself and think, "Hey, I'm okay with dying. No big deal." But when we reach a certain age, show of hands, it starts to get shoved into our face on a daily basis. The slope of the decline of one's physical prowess starts to get steeper and steeper, and ultimately our mental abilities decline as well. If at that time we are deeply into a habit of denial, it's very difficult to let go and face the matter. Case number 29 in the Hekigan Roku. A monk asked Da Sui, "When the conflagration at the end of the kalpa sweeps through and the great cosmos is destroyed, I wonder, is this one destroyed or not?" Da Sui said, "It will be destroyed." The monk said, "Will it be gone with everything else?" Dazui said, "It will be gone with everything else." Case 55 in the Hekigan Roku reads in part, "One day Dao Wu, accompanied by his disciple Qian Yan, went to pay his condolences at the house of a man who had just died in the neighborhood of the temple. Qian Yan, tapping the coffin, said, 'Alive or dead?' Dao Wu said, 'I won't say alive and I won't say dead.' Qian Yan said, 'Why won't you say?' Dao Wu said, 'I won't say.' On their way home, Qian Yan said, 'Teacher, if you don't tell me, I will hit you.' Dao Wu said, 'You may hit me if you like, but I won't say.' Qian Yan struck Dao Wu. Later, Dao Wu passed away. Qian Yan went to Shi Shuang and brought up the foregoing story. Shi Shuang said, 'I won't say alive and I won't say dead.' Upon these words, Qian Yan had a realization. Case number 82 in the Hekigan Roku. A monk said to Da Lung, 'The physical body rots away. What is the hard and fast body of reality?' Da Lung said, 'The mountain flowers cover the hillside like brocade. The valley streams are blue as indigo.'" In each of these cases, a monk asks a teacher. In each case, there might well be a measure of desperation in the monk's question. Each monk is looking for some degree of comfort, an excuse to deny the fact of death. And the teacher in each case answers directly and at the same time throws the monk back upon his own practice. On his own practice. Our practice, the one thing that all of us can rely on, but are sometimes reluctant to. We want to look to the outside, to a teacher, a book, a nice philosophical quote. But in the present case, Do Shuai himself asks the question. We walk in the door, and before we can say a word, before we even make our bows, he puts it to us. It's up to us to answer Do Shuai. We are forced to face the gritty reality. Do Shuai set up three barriers to examine his students. You make your way through the darkness of abandoned grasses in a single-minded search for your self-nature. Now, honored one, where is your nature? When you have realized your self-nature, you are free of birth and death. When the light of your eyes falls, how are you free? When you are free of birth and death, you know where to go. When your four elements scatter, where do you go? Why did he put these three questions together? What is their relationship? Are they all the same question? Or is this some kind of step-by-step progression of practice from searching out our true nature to be free in death and even beyond? You make your way through the darkness and abandoned grasses in a single-minded search for your self-nature. Now, honored one, where is your nature? A single-minded search for our true nature. Does that search ever end? It had better not. Practice is beginningless and endless. Of course, there are milestone experiences, and practice changes as time goes on. The desperate searching, the high-energy striving with Mu, is transformed into something else. An exploration of our self-nature, a quiet and continuing observation and acceptance, or best of all, the deep enjoyment of the self-nature by the self-nature. There is no abiding place, not in ignorance, not in enlightenment, not in knowing, not in not knowing. And that no abiding itself is our true nature. Once we no longer abide in no abiding and let go of letting go, that is. No trace of realization remains, and this no trace continues endlessly, says Dogen. When you have realized your self-nature, you are free of birth and death. When the light of your eyes falls, how are you free? Yep, and then we die. How do we die? What are we in that moment when the world goes into its last fading? Death is the ultimate manifestation of impermanence. One teacher said that when you die, everything you ever thought was permanent will disappear. It is said that the Roman Emperor Claudius witnessed executions close up. He looked carefully into the victim's eyes, trying to see exactly what happened at the moment of death. He was never able to resolve the issue. As part of our every minute Zen practice, we do a series of meditations on death. We spend some time on each of the when, where, how, who, and what of our dying. Now, the object of this exercise is not to get morbidly obsessed with death and dying. It is to realize deeply that we will indeed die. And the more familiar we are with the matter, the more we consider the possibilities, the less strange and mysterious, the less frightening they become. The more we try not to think about something like death, the more obsessed and fearful we become with it. So we deal with it rather like with fear of the dark, by venturing step by step into a dark room. And it is easier if one is accompanied by a guide or a teacher. There are an infinite number of ways, manners, and times of death, and we haven't a clue how it will actually be. So the exercise is put as a series of questions. No answers required. In fact, no answers are possible. When you are free of birth and death, you know where to go. When your four elements scatter, where do you go? When your four elements scatter. When does that happen? Only at physical death? In what way do the four elements scatter in our dying? In what way do they scatter in our living, in our practice? What are the four elements anyway? Traditionally, they are earth, air, fire, and water. But we could just as easily say bone, blood, flesh, and mind. Or form, feeling, thought, choice, and consciousness. But what is the true nature of any of these? What are such things as elements, or birth, or death, at their most fundamental? If we truly realize, then they have already scattered in our Zazen. What is left? Where do you go? Where does this self go? If it goes at death or at any time, was it ever really there in the first place? This brings us back to the beginning. If you know your self-nature, if you really know it, then there is nothing that was born and nothing that can die. The self that we cling to is just a series of impressions cobbled together, which changes moment to moment. The more we study this, the more evident it becomes. One day we may be able to let go of it altogether. So is this koan really about death? Or is it about life? About practice? The contemplation of death can be a door into our lives if we let it. Wu Men's commentary. If you can rightly give the three turning words here, you will be master in all the varied circumstances and will deal with your affinities in accord with the Buddha Dharma. If you have not resolved the matter, the food you bolt down won't sustain you. Chew it well and you won't be hungry. To be master in all the varied circumstances, to deal with our affinities in accord with Buddha Dharma. Therein lies the key. If we truly live every moment, truly are every moment, we are already free of life and death. Not too long ago, there was a lot of stuff in the popular media about death with dignity. There was this notion that everyone has the right to a peaceful, painless death in a serene environment. But that's a fantasy. How you die is inevitably a continuation of how you live, or how you are living at the moment of death. If we practice our lives continuously, when death comes, we just practice that. Practice is letting go, dying each moment. If we can do that, and it's not easy, then death becomes a non-issue. Robert Aitken Roshi is semi-famous for his answer to someone who asked him how he felt about death. He said, like Peter Pan setting out on another adventure, the only way anyone can say that is if every moment of living is an adventure. One of the seven factors of enlightenment that we are discussing on Tuesday evenings, this training period, is investigation. Investigation requires curiosity, continuous, insatiable curiosity. This curiosity, this questioning, is not a questing. It is not a demand. It is a questioning that does not require answers. What is this? What is this breath? This sensation? What is this sound? Philip Kaplow Roshi liked to say that answers die, questions live forever. Answers arise, but they fall away again. It doesn't have to be about the profound stuff. What is the meaning of life and all that? It is about interest, an undemanding and unselfish fascination with the right here and now. The more we cling to one thing, the more we are caught by its opposite. That's the way the mind works. The more we cling to notions of life, the more obsessed we are by the notion of death. It is the questioning, the not knowing that releases our hold. This not knowing curiosity that neither seeks nor desires an answer is what we sometimes call wonder. If we can always ask, what is this? Who is this? In a selfless way, the old fearful obsession with death and dying is transformed into that wonder, which is in itself loving kindness. Wu Men's verse. This one instant as it is an infinite number of kalpas. An infinite number of kalpas are at this same time, this one instant. If you see into this fact, the true self which is seeing has been seen into. This one instant, an infinite number of kalpas. An infinite number of kalpas, this one instant. All moments are this moment. Notions of birth and death come out of notions of past and future. If our practice has no object outside this one moment, this infinite here, this eternal now, there is nothing to wait for, there is nothing to worry about. But it takes a lot of work to get to the point where one comes to this, not just as a clever philosophical point, but as a genuine life-changing realization. The adventure is right here, right now, in our practice. Our practice is the practice of this moment. There is no other. There can be no other. Together, with all beings, we realize the way.